Oh, I have to find your email office. You want me to go get it for you?
I don't see me on. Oh, maybe I'm at the top.
You're at the top. Unless you talk, you'll probably get a closer view.
Well, I've been talking, but it's
Yeah, you're in there. You're in the middle on that top screen.
Hi, Alan. Can you hear me, Alan?
Yeah, I'm getting my audio on.
I'm not talking, I just want to
Hey, Owl, track me. It doesn't seem to want to track over this way.
Okay, maybe I'm going to take it over manually.
That's fine. I can sit next to.
No. It's
kind of weird.
Okay, I'm taking control of it. Yeah, let's see.
Oh, there
it is. Okay, you just took a while.
That's close enough.
Okay, so I'm going to set it back to automatic because I can't do the thing at one time.
Well, okay.
You want me to
talk about that?
Where you been, Janet?
Do we have a quorum yet?
Yes, we do.
Okay, then as long as we have a quorum, I'm going to call the meeting to order. This is the June 3rd meeting of the Monterey Bay Air Resources District Advisory Committee meeting. Will you take a roll call?
Great. Chair Brennan?
Here.
I know he's planning to call in. Committee member Critchley is excused via email. Committee member Davis is excused via email. Committee member Gray?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Committee member Mack?
Present.
Committee member McClaney?
Yes, present.
Committee member Rock?
Here.
Here. Thank you. Committee member Smith?
Here.
Committee member Storm? Okay. Committee member Stroll?
Here.
No, you're in Stonehenge.
Yes, I am. It's a long distance, and luckily my laptop's working well.
Committee member Slint? No. Committee member Turley?
Here.
Is that it?
Yes, we have a form.
Thank you. Rich, you did not appear to be online.
I'm right here.
Oh, okay. Oh, would you like to introduce our new executive assistant before we go on to the agenda?
Yes, thank you, Chair Brennan. So, as you all know, Ian has retired, and we went through a competitive recruitment process and got the best and brightest. And that here is Siri Tonger. And I'll let Siri actually introduce herself. I'll just say that she's got a lot of really great experience, most recently in Sonoma with the library system, but she does have roots in this community. So I'll give it Siri a couple minutes to talk about herself.
Thank you. This is a test. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Siri Tonger, born and raised on the Monterey Peninsula. Recently, I've been in government 9.5 years as the Fund Development Officer at Monterey Public Library, and the most recently, the Fund Development Manager at Sonoma County Library. Very happy to be back home on the Monterey Peninsula.
And this is her first meeting with us, and we're using a device called the OWL, which is directed towards anybody speaking in the building. We are now having a hybrid meeting. So we're trying to get the kinks out of it. We'll go full-blown hybrid with the board meeting, and all are will be welcome, providing we don't have another crash from the Delta variant. All will be welcome to show up in person at our next advisory committee meeting.
Thank you, Rich. Are there any changes to the agenda?
No changes.
Now's the time for comments from the public on items not on the agenda. Are there any public comments? See
here in the room. No public here.
I see no hands raised at this point. The next item is to accept and file the summary of actions of the last meeting. Are there any comments on the summary? If not, we will accept them. So the next item is 6, receive a presentation on mid-year 2021 engineering and compliance activities. Amy?
Hello, good afternoon. So bear with me here. This is my first meeting with the OWL. So I'm going to share my presentation. All right. Well, welcome to OWL. Hopefully you can hear me. Let me know if you cannot. I'll just be doing a brief mid-year report on our engineering compliance activity data. So first, I'll just give a brief overview of our engineering compliance division. This will be a little bit of a refresher from what we talked to back in June, and then I'll go through the data. So again, our engineering side of the house issues permits and ensures that equipment is in compliance with federal, state, and local regulations. These permits are issued with operating conditions that ensure that they can meet the regulatory requirements. Our engineering staff also develop rules and regulations, and they put together an annual emission inventory for stationary sources. So mid-year, that's January 1 through June 30, 2021. We've received 172 permit applications, and this is on par with what we received actually last year and the year before. Most of these numbers here.
Hey, what's up, Eddie?
Most of the numbers here are on par with what we've seen in the past. We haven't had any ag engine registrations in the first 6 months this year. Only one emission. Client side of the house, once the permit is issued.
I think that sounds good, but.
And so our inspectors go in and inspect those permitted sources, and they make sure that they're following the permit conditions. And if they find any issues when they're out in the field, they'll issue violations. And we also have a team that ensures compliance with the federal asbestos regulation, and that's for renovations that contain related asbestos containment.
I've never played in the Silver Spur.
Amy, let me interrupt you. One is, has their audio on and it's interrupting the presentation? I think it's Scott. Thank you. Sorry, Amy.
Hey. They're just working on it, so I'm just gonna hang on one more second.
So where are we?
I'll just keep going. As far as inspectors offer funding. This is a snapshot of our compliance activity for the first half of the year. Fortunately, the lifting of the COVID restrictions back in June, our inspectors were able to get out into the field. We had been doing a hybrid inspection, some remote, and then if we were able to do outdoor inspections, we were doing those. And then back in June, we resumed our normal operations. We issued fewer notices to comply and notices of violation in this first 6 month period compared to the prior year. We've had about the same number of asbestos notifications and inspections, same number of complaints and breakdowns, source test observations and variances. Hang on. Let me just try that again. Okay, well, it's not working. Yeah, for some reason my slide stopped advancing, but I just also wanted to mention my final thoughts were going to be that we went live on July 19th with a new database called Excella. And so we're excited to transition to this new database. It allows us to take asbestos notifications and permit applications online. It's a cloud-hosted database. We don't have to have an on-premise server. It has a mobile app, so our inspectors are able to do inspections in the field using the app. And as goes with any new database, we have some learning to do these past few weeks, but we are confident that it's going to work much better for us than our current database. So with that, I will take any questions.
Yes, I had a question, Alan Stroh. On your complaints, you have complaints received. Are those all field activities, or is that just paperwork?
It depends on the complaint. If we get a complaint about something like a gas station that the nozzle didn't read the right, they think they got overcharged for gas that was dispensed, that's actually a weights and measures issue. So we would refer that complaint to the Ag Commissioner office because they do the weights and measures. So it kind of depends on the type of complaint that we get, whether or not we do a field response.
Do you have an approximation of what percentage of your complaints received that actually require field action? I'm just trying to get a handle on how much, you know, time in the field you spend totally.
Sure. I'd say about 50%. We do get a lot of, for example, fugitive dust complaints, and those are a little easier to go out in the field and see what's actually going on. As long as it's active, we usually ask the person, is this an active complaint? If they say no, it happened last week, and we wouldn't send the person out that day, we'd ask them to call back on a day when it was happening so we could go out and observe it for ourselves.
Thank you.
Are there other questions from the committee or comments? Seeing none, let's go on to the next item, which is a presentation and report of the daily 8-hour peak ozone concentrations, etc. So is David Frisbee doing that?
Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon. Give me a moment to get my presentation on. There we go. How's that?
Good.
Okay, good. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, good afternoon. I'm here to give you an update on our air monitoring data for 2021 for the first half. The air district monitor has 7 air monitoring stations that are permanent, year-round stations. There's an additional station that is operated by the National Park Service at Pinnacles. We monitor for PM2.5 at all the stations except for Pinnacles. We measure for ozone at all of the stations except for San Lorenzo Valley. And we measure for PM10 at Hollister, San Juan Batista, and King City air monitoring station. During the winter months, we add 3 additional seasonal monitors up in the San Lorenzo Valley to measure wintertime smoke from wood stoves and fireplaces, because that's, we tend to see elevated concentrations during those months. These are a couple pictures of our air monitoring stations. Examples. This is they are usually sheds that that house the equipment with some sample ports that go out the roof. We also have meteorology instruments measure temperature, air temperature, wind speed, and wind direction. These are examples of our instruments inside the sheds. We've got an instrument rack on the left that just shows the displays of the instruments. In the backside, the middle picture, you'll see the samples coming into the instrument at the back. It goes through a series of conditioning for the sample to take out the moisture, and then it goes to the sampler itself. On the right, you'll see a particulate monitor which has filters, which we will pull from time to time and send it to the Bay Area Air Quality Management District for weighing. We measure in order to compare our air quality to the California national standards. And you'll see for ozone, particulate matter in the 2.5 micrometers in size, and particulate matter 10 micrometers in size, there are different averaging times. And there are different concentrations that we have to stay within for those averaging times. So for the first half of 2021 for the hourly peak ozone, you'll see the concentration of limit or the standard is this black line, dark bolded line at 90 parts per billion. And you can tell that with all the the air monitoring stations, we've stayed well within the standard for 1 hour peak close up. And the same goes for the daily 8 hour peak close zone. We stayed well within the standard, which is the bold line here. For PM 2.5, which is an indication of smoke, essentially, all of our permanent monitoring stations were well within the federal standard, 35 micrograms per cubic meter. And our seasonal monitors picked up 1 day of PM 2.5 in January this year. For PM 10 at the Hollister in King City in January, we exceeded 1 day on the same day. And then in June, we exceeded 3 days in a row at King City Station. Our newest station at San Juan Bautista, we did not see any exceedances of PM 10. Ordinarily, we'll see at King City this time of year probably several exceedances of the standard. And it's usually during drier months beginning around May through the rains at the in November when it does rain. But this year, in the last few years, we've seen lower concentrations of PM10. This is a picture of our new smoke sensor that we have on the roof here at the district office. It's a sensor that is developed by a company called Clarity. It measures PM 2.5. So the idea is that we'll be picking up smoke from wildfires and perhaps prescribed burns. And we picked this, we chose this device because it has, it's connected to a 4G network. So we don't need Wi-Fi to get or receive the data. As well as it has the solar panel in front of the battery pack, so that it does not need line power. So far we've purchased 10 of these units and have distributed them throughout the district. We should be receiving another 15 by next week. And we'll be distributing them in all the municipalities within the district as well as some of the outskirts. This is an example of where we have the monitors or the sensors rather. It's not just our network that's included in this, but the broader international network of these sensors as well. And this is displayed on a map on our wildfire smoke information website. The idea here is that we'll get a more detailed look at the concentrations of wildfire smoke that regulatory monitors, so we don't have the distribution to pick up the refined view of how the impacts of wildfire smoke on our area. Future developments for this project will be to develop our own map and a index on a shorter averaging period. Right now, the air quality index is based on a 24-hour average. We're looking to establish an index that is based on a 1 hour average or shorter time period so that people get a better idea of what they're being exposed to. With that, I'll take any of your questions.
I did have a question that is not directly related to your ongoing monitoring. A while back, you had issues out at Carmel by the Sea and the fire pits on the beach. I was just wondering if you're still involved in any monitoring out there or plan to be this summer. Summer's almost gone, it seems like. But I was curious of what's been going on out there. Is that going down to a low simmer?
Yeah, sure. So we have not had any requests from the city to do any monitoring of air quality there. We have done that in the past, and the monitors had shown when they reduced the number of burn sites, the monitors showed very minor detectable amounts of smoke. So right now, I believe they're down to about 8 designated areas, and they typically remove those fire pits, which are technically smokeless fire pits, which do smoke, but they remove those at the beginning of the storm season. So they're only deployed during summer months. And compared to the beginning when we got involved, when there was unlimited, as many as 150 fires at once, we're down to 8 designated areas. They may increase that, they may not. But at this point, we've also seen a significant reduction in the number of complaints from area residents. So it's not an issue at this time any longer. That's not to say it's completely fixed, but we'd like to see a complete burn ban along the beach, but that's something that the Coastal Commission does not agree with. So that's where we're at.
Lacey has her hand up.
Thanks, Janet, and thanks for the presentation. Just had a question on the slide where you showed the PM10, and maybe it was the PM2.5 that was right before that as well, but you noted a mark, a spike in January, I think it was sometime, but also noticed just sort of a general trend lined upward. And I'm wondering if that's seasonal or if that is a standalone incident where, you know, it just sort of generally is trending upward. So it's probably like slide 9, maybe slide 8 and 9. I think it's the next one. This one. So you noted what caused this spike? And then is it fair to say that line is trending upward, or is it sort of go up and down depending on the season?
The spike in January, Bill, do you have any idea?
Yes, that was
spike in January was wood smoke at both Kingston and Hall.
No, this is PM10.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was more of a regional.
Yeah, that was one station, not both. Sorry.
Yeah, it was just one King City. January was
an unusual time for King City too. It was probably a windy, yeah. All right, so PM10 was probably a windy day, and that is not typical for that month.
Okay.
And it's not, it's not a
trend.
It's a single day, so it's not a trend.
Yes.
Right.
I think the general nature of the graph.
The past couple of years, past 2 years, including this year, so last year and this year, we typically see what, about 30 to 40 events at PM10 over the course of the year. Last year, we didn't see anything until the wildfire spoke from the big wildfires last year.
November.
And only one of those was actually PM10. The rest were actually wild smoke, the smoke component of the PM10. This year, we're seeing basically 4 days here, but basically 2 events. So one in January, which is very unusual, I almost never see it then. And then one 3-day event, King City in June, which is typical for this time of year. You usually see more.
We usually see smoke dust from, so PM10 is an indicator of dust. And so we'll see usually in King City, higher concentrations of dust due to the plowing of fields quite frequently is done during windy conditions. And so we will see an elevated concentration of PM10. Usually when you see the 20 miles per hour, we'll start to see elevated concentrations of King City.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
I had a question.
Yeah, Karen, go ahead.
David, I was curious if you were familiar at all with the mobile air monitoring. This is something like measuring air quality from a moving car, just as you would see Google making their maps. But it's taking readings and being able to see local pollution hotspots in urban areas.
Yeah, we definitely heard of that. We don't have a lot of urban areas that we have the need for that type of monitoring. Most of our monitoring is for regulatory purposes for the airshed, although we do have occasional monitors at the local neighborhood scale. But, you know, those vehicles, I know specifically in South Coast, they've used those vehicles for basically emergency response type to incidents ranging from methane gas to smoke in particulate. So at this point,
interesting. I read a report, one of their trials, and it showed that they actually saw quite significant air quality differences just in neighborhoods. And I was curious because the monitors here are fairly spread out. And like you said, you're testing for state regulation, but is there any plans at all to look at micro air pollution monitoring?
There are no plans, with the exception that we've just deployed and will be deploying a pretty robust air monitoring sensor network for wildfire smoke. And so we'll have a monitor in each of our 21 cities, and then a few additional on the outside hinterlands, so we can get a better picture of smoke impacts on a real-time basis. So that's about as granular as we can get. The other thing I would say is that there are no health related exposure standards for any type of exposure to particulate less than 24 hours. So it really doesn't make sense to have a vehicle drive through an area, take a reading, unless it's for regulatory purposes. You'd have to be sitting in one spot in an approved location that does not have any other sources of pollution for 24 hours. So at this point, we have looked into having a van that we could deploy in emergency situations. And that's something we'll probably be considering as we move forward, especially if our wildfire smoke gets worse. So, but at this time, we don't have the capacity to monitor every neighborhood within our jurisdiction.
Also, let me interrupt just a moment. Rich, Karen may be thinking toxic hotspots, and previous years, you know, carbon monoxide was the point source, but we have not had any violations of this carbon monoxide standard in years. So Karen may be thinking of toxic hotspots, and the district does address that. So maybe that's what she has in mind.
No, I was just curious about the different, how do we differentiate different air pollution levels at a more micro level? But just curious if there was any plan to do that other than like public, public sourcing or crowdsourcing of air pollution information. I was curious, where is the sensor in Carmel Valley that you have? You showed a picture of it, but
it's on Pilot Road. It's on Pilot Road.
The two Arcito School in Carmel Valley.
It's a sensor.
Oh, the sensor? We don't have a sensor out there yet.
Yeah, we have.
Are there other questions, comments? If not, we'll go on to the next agenda item, which is to receive the oral report from the Air Pollution Control Officer.
Rich? Thank Chair Brennan, I usually have this available for you, but it's pretty short this time around, so I'll get through it pretty quickly, and you may, if you need it, I can send you a copy. First of all, just an update on May and June board meetings. So the big heavy lift items there where we have independent hearings in both of those months to consider adoption of our budget and also our fee schedules. So we did conduct hearings in May and June for both. The board adopted our budget at the June board meeting and our new fee schedule. The fees, for the most part, increased consistent with CPI by 2%, save a number of categories, one of them being asbestos fees. We felt that we were collecting enough in that category. Also, the other lift that we had these last, seemed like 6 months, was to finish and conclude labor negotiations with the union. So we'll have a new contract with a tentative agreement, and we'll have a new contract signed at our next board meeting this month. The other employee related, you met Siri, our new clerk of the board and executive assistant. We are also hiring a new employee who's an air monitoring specialist. His name is Ron Barros. He comes to us from the California Air Resources Board, a seasoned veteran, and he should bring a lot of experience to replace outgoing Scott Norton, who retired back in May. We are also starting recruitment for an air quality engineer 1/2. So we hope to have interviews in the next few weeks. Applications are being solicited at this point. In engineering, the board, this is standing item on the board. We have a report to the board on marina odors. That's odors from the landfill or other sources around the marina area. On Memorial Day, we received one odor complaint from the East Garrison neighborhood. There's no evidence that should suggest it was coming from marina, except we received that complaint. But we notified all the appropriate people that are involved and on our listserv about that complaint. We've received no other odor complaints since then. In May, we referred two cases to the Monterey County District Attorney's Office, which included one case with over 200 identified violations. And then another case we referred to the Santa Cruz County District Attorney's Office. This one case with all the violations is huge, and the DA is very interested. It involves cannabis growing and power production and quasi-legal diesel generators. So stay tuned for more on that. Our engineering team provided feedback to the California Department of Food and Agriculture on-farm composting tool that they've developed. The CEFA is creating a spreadsheet tool with requirements for air districts, Cal Recycle, and the Water Board to assist farmers with understanding the regulations that may apply to different on-farm compost operations. This is in addition to off-farm composting, which has become a significant headache to the district with respect to emissions, which are volatile organic chemicals, and odors. But Cal Recycle is pushing they want to redirect compostable materials from landfill disposal to composting. The jury's out on whether or not that will save emissions. Also, I just wanted to let you know that we received, it's around $200,000 grant from EPA. It's an exchange network grant, which will assist us with required EPA reporting and documentation requirements surrounding violations. It's really competitive, and I'm really proud of Amy and her staff that put together a great package, and we were successful. So we'll be integrating that to the extent possible with our new database and other reporting tools. Planning and air monitoring, we held a community air protection program virtual workshop on June 8th to gather input from residents in low-income and disadvantaged communities on how to spend incentive grant funds to reduce our pollution in their neighborhoods. Potential impacts could be tractor replacements, electrification on road and off-road equipment, improved school filtration system and installation of air pollution control devices on stationary equipment. We did extensive outreach on this. You may have heard our ads on the TV and radio and newspaper. We only had 6 members attend the meeting, but that's actually a success by some of our other attendance standards. So we're happy to hold that workshop, which is a requirement of the grant itself as well. And then Bill or David mentioned our wildfire sensor network. This is one of the first in the nation for an air district to deploy this type of network. And I'm happy to say that we haven't had to really use it this year down here. We expect to see some the weather being pretty dynamic. We may have a low pressure system moving in, but we haven't seen a lot of smoke impacts from some of the monster fires to the north of us yet. But that could happen. They're seeing impacts as far back as Washington, D.C. from some of those fires. So hopefully we'll have all our network sensor running, and we're working with the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment to get out on messaging on shorter term exposure to smoke. As I mentioned earlier, there is no health standard for durations less than 24 hours. We hope to work with Cal EPA on at least having some benchmarks for exposures that are in the subacute category, so anywhere from 1 to 8 hours. And that will be part of our messaging on our wildfire smoke information page. That concludes the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Thank you, Rich. The next item are suggestions for future agenda items. Any suggestions? Lacey?
Hi, I'd just like to reiterate the suggestions that were made at the last meeting. I think they're on the notes around the climate action planning, I think from AMBAG and maybe the county's climate action planning. So just
Thank you, Lacey. I was going to suggest the same thing that the county of Monterey, Carmel are all working on climate action plans, and Gonzales has an adopted one that would be helpful. And AMBAG is doing a community sustainability strategy. So that's another item that would be of interest perhaps to the committee. So are there other comments? Lacey? Karen? Okay, I was just looking at hands raised and they got lowered. Any other recommendations? All right, I have no comments.
I have a comment, sorry, I was on mute.
Okay.
So just, I have a suggestion, but let me go back to what you're saying about the climate change meeting. So I actually, by the encouragement of Karen Felito, who's a city councilwoman for Carmel, she suggested I attend the Carmel Climate Change Planning Committee meeting last month, which I did. And one thing I took from that was I thought it was a good idea to get involved with that. But let me suggest to this advisory committee, instead of just passively having the presentations given to us on the climate change plan, is to maybe actively put together some ideas of how they can address air pollution or air quality in those plans. Because I think that might be something that we can, you know, as a committee, or maybe Richard's already done this with his team, but I just felt like they're kind of putting together a plan based on what the California state requirement is that all municipalities and counties or wherever come up with a climate change plan and how they're going to address it. But for us, maybe we can come up with specifically air quality things that we would like to see incorporated into those plans. just an idea.
And Rich, Rich, do you want to respond to that?
We do review and provide comment to those plans when they are submitted to us from the various entities preparing them. It's not something that we actually get paid to do. It's one area that, like it or not, and the state doesn't like us getting involved in greenhouse gas regulation, that's why we don't have an active program. The Bay Area Air Quality Management District has an active climate change program, and actually there's been lawsuits between the state and the Bay Area Air Quality Management District on that issue. So I guess the state is supposed to stay out of that, but we do, if submitted to us, we will be happy to review and comment, because most of the time combustion is what's causing the emission of CO2 and other gases. And we can also hopefully reduce other air pollutants associated with combustion byproducts. So we're happy to do that. You guys are also welcome to provide comments when they make that available to the public for review and comment.
I would just like to add that climate action plans are intended to replace a threshold of significance adopted by local jurisdictions for CEQA purposes, and that's the primary purpose of a climate action plan. So, Karen, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but thought that was a good, okay.
That's fine. This second thing I wanted to bring up to the advisory committee is I was noticing that this advisory committee is made up of, and correct me if I'm wrong, 22 members, and I think there's still 9 positions that are open. And I took a look at the census for 2019, and for Monterey County and for San Benito County, the population which identifies as Hispanic is 60% of the community. And in Santa Cruz, it's 40%. And I'm just thinking, if we're to be an advisory committee that represents the community, I was wondering, Richard, if you couldn't go back to the board and maybe encourage them to fill those positions with people that, you know, from the Hispanic community that might join this.
I'd be happy to. I pretty much every board meeting encourage the board to make their appointments. And I have no power of appointing members myself. But I think that's a good point. I think that's something that is really actually now very much at the fore, is that the communities and any groups should look like the people they're representing. So I can make that reminder to the board of directors. We do have one applicant that has applied, and I have to find a board member that is willing to sponsor that or appoint that person. The board members have not been really, eager to appoint people to this committee. And we've had in the past some turnover issues as well. So I make that announcement in almost every board meeting. And I think your idea with respect to representation is a good one. And I will do that at our next board meeting.
Well, and I also wanted to add, maybe we could also reach out. I know I have quite a lot of my active members are from the Hispanic community, including a medical clinic in Salinas and some others, businesses. And I'm not sure if MBARD's already reached out to that community as far as these positions.
We put out announcements, but we request people to contact their board members. And I would ask you to, if you do talk to those folks, tell them to contact their representative board member, or any board member for that matter, because the representative does not have to live in the same district as the board member. So that would be helpful if it was coming from the board member directly, because we end up doing a lot of work behind the scenes, and then we end up having to shop for a board member willing to appoint folks. And that's how a number of you got appointed, actually, because a board member has just decided, for whatever reason, not to make the appointment. So I would encourage you, if somebody's interested, they can contact me or the board member directly. And you can look at our website, too, and it shows who has openings with respect to filling vacancies on the advisory committee.
Alan, did you have a comment?
Well, I just wanted to add to the discussion that I think it's important to you. And we are an advisory committee. And I think if this is something maybe at our next meeting we could take up with actual, somebody could move that we take an official position to advise the agency and the board of the agency to make every effort, even if they might already be doing that. It wouldn't hurt for us to go on record as an advisory committee if we get a positive vote on that. That's just was a suggestion I wanted to make.
Thank you. Are there any other comments?
I think that's I'll just say that I'm committed to, you can do that formally at our next meeting if you want to put that on the agenda, but I'll commit to letting the board know that the advisory committee is requesting that they make their full appointments.
Okay, if there are no other comments, the meeting is adjourned.
I have a comment.
Lacey?
Sorry to stop at the last. I didn't know if we had moved on to the committee comments formally or if we were still talking about the previous item, but I just have a comment, and maybe it's a question, because I should have probably asked this when we were reviewing the notes from the last meeting, but I noticed that in the notes, we didn't have anything related to the electric bike incentive program. It just says we received a presentation, but we actually had a really robust discussion around that. And I think we did provide some recommendations to the staff to bring back to the board. So I don't, you know, this is only my second meeting. So I don't know if because that agenda item wasn't set up to receive comments and input, they just put that they received a presentation, or if we can get an update on sort of the fact that there were specific suggestions made and what happened to those suggestions.
Rich, do you want to comment?
Yeah, really quickly. So we took your suggestions from the committee and informed the board of those suggestions. The board basically actually punted it back to us to come up with a new plan, incorporating the advisory committee's comments as well as their new comments. And I think they were basically in line with what the advisory committee was saying. So we're bringing to the board a new program that will be essentially part of the electric vehicle incentive program that will include the bikes. So we've got $50,000 set aside. We, with board direction, we're going to offer that to low-income folks, and we're going to increase the amount to $1,000 per bicycle. So I think those were some of the comments we heard loud and clear from the committee as well as the board. So that's going to be, in essence, what our new program looks like that we'll be taking the board this month for approval.
Okay, thank you. Are any other questions? If not, we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you for attending. Mm-hmm.